The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams. Welcome, guys, to another episode of the IMG Roadmap podcast. This episode is particularly sponsored by imgroadmap.com, which is an online course that helps guide IMGs into the process of matching into residency. So today's episode is actually with a very special guest. She is also one of the co-authors of Beyond Challenges, which is a book that I co-authored and compiled as well in 2019. And she's one of the 15 survival stories of African female physicians that are in that book. So I'll let her introduce herself. She is phenomenal. She's a fellow currently. And without further ado, welcome on the show. Can you introduce yourself to us, Dr. Tala?
Thank you so much, Dr. Loom, for having me on the show. I am Dr. Clarice Tala. I'm a board-certified family medicine physician, currently pursuing a maternity care fellowship, which just means taking care of like high-risk obstetrics here in Rhode Island. And I'm also pursuing a master's degree in public health in Brown University. It's a two-year program. I'm loving it. It's hard, but loving it and surviving it. So I actually went to school. I'm very excited, by the way, that you're doing this. I wish I had known about you when I was pursuing residency. I think during that period of my time, I was looking for a book of life. Like, where should I be right now during this time of my life? And I think you are that answer. So thank you very much for doing this for people who are currently doing the same thing that we did a couple of years ago. And thankfully, they don't have to go about it blindly. But anyway, I divert. I went to college here in the U.S. at the Georgia Institute of Technology for biomedical engineering, after which I went to medical school in St. George's University. And then residency at NYU Langone, Brooklyn campus, and then now fellowship. So that has kind of been my journey.
Wow. Thank you so much for, you know, just taking the time out. I understand that your schedule is pretty busy as a fellow and a fellow that's also pursuing a master's in public health at a pretty great university. I'm sure you have your hands full. So we appreciate having you on here. You did mention that you are a graduate from one of the top four Caribbean schools, St. George's University. And so I do know for a fact that we have a huge audience at SGU here on the show. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, the blog, my blog, drninaloom.com, gets tons of hits from students from that area. So I really want you to sort of just give us a rundown of what medical school was like for you on the island.
Ooh. So actually, I only spent 1 year at, in Grenada because I got accepted into like the Global Scholar Program, which was the whole idea of that program was first year of medical school in the UA in the UK rather, second year in Grenada, and then the last 2 years in the United States, and it was just to be able to get a feel of the healthcare in different settings, like in different countries, so to speak. So, but my experience in Grenada, it was interesting. I loved it in the sense of it was warm, there was water, unlike in the UK, which was cold all the time and dark for the most part. But I it was a very tough time in my life. I think a lot of things happened during that 1 year in Grenada, and it was like back to back, including just losses of my friend and my father during that year. So as much as it was a very beautiful place, that every time someone asks me about my experience there, I always have this hesitation because it was actually not a very pleasant time in my life.
Right. And did those things maybe affect your performance in school, or was it just more so the stressors that were present while you were in school?
Well, yes, in a sense, it did affect my performance, but it was more on a like one exam or two exams, as opposed to overall performance. But I think the way I suffered the most was the emotional toll, so to speak. So as you know, medical school is grueling, like you are going from one activity to another, which is usually academia. And then you try to eat and you try to get some sleep and you get up and you repeat the same thing. And to be able to do that, which is already so hard, and then add on another exhausting emotional component, it just makes the challenge even like it doubles it or triples it, so to speak.
Right. That's very understandable. But, you know, I think the joy of it now is looking back, you know, that's a season of your life that you have moved from and you've been able to write a story about it in a published book that was a bestseller. And you are thriving through in your career despite those trials. And I think that that's really what speaks more to your story is, you know, you didn't let that define you as far as you didn't let that become the reason not to succeed. So I applaud you for that.
Oh, thank you. Definitely. I think it's only made me a stronger person. And it was one of those periods that could either be broken or made stronger. And thankfully, I came out on the other side. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Do you have any advice for people that are listening to this, maybe on some island, completing basic sciences and are just in a funk? You know, like they're just not able to get their head over water. With one thing or the other, whether it's a school test, whether it's a home stressor, do you have any advice for that group of students?
Definitely. I would say during that period of time, the one thing that got me through were a bunch of great friends. Without them, I wouldn't have been able to survive. And with that was my passion, actually, for salsa, so to speak. I came into salsa, it was very strange. It was accidental that I started dancing salsa. I think salsa definitely has been one of those things that have gotten me through very difficult times because I just express myself and on the dance floor and I'm good for another 2 to 3 weeks. So I go salsa dancing again when I can. So I would say find a hobby, something you're passionate about, and make the time to carry out that hobby, to just let out the stress of the week, what have you, and find a great support system as well. Because, I mean, we're not meant to be conquering all these challenges on our own. If you're trying to do everything on your own, you definitely not succeed. Or if you succeed, then you'll definitely be scarred. So, yeah, those would be my two pieces of advice is, good friends, and hobby.
Yeah. Well, thanks. So let's get into meaty stuff here. We'd like to know, you know, how that process into for you, we like to know what the process was for you to match into family medicine residency and then subsequently a women's health fellowship, which is a 2-year program. And you told us, you know, you completed family medicine residency at NYU Langone, and now you're completing an obstetrical fellowship alongside an MPA. So can you just walk us through sort of what it takes to be where you're at?
Hard work and determination. So to start off, I guess starting off with how I got into residency, right? It was really very interesting. The first time I applied, I actually did not get into any residency program, which was very shocking. And I thought my whole world was crumbling. The first time around, I applied only to OBGYN. My scores were definitely, I'm not a genius, I would tell you that. I'm just a hard worker. And plus, I was an international student, which meant I needed the J1 or the H1B. And as all of you might know, the OBGYN programs are not as numerous as the family medicine or the internal medicine or the psychiatry program. So they're very, very competitive and not a lot of spots. I think there's like 2 spots in some programs. And I think the highest I've heard of is like 10 per year, that is to say. So the first time around, I did not match. During that year, I shadowed a family physician for that year and just worked on my application, and I was networking like crazy. And then the second time around, I applied to OBGYN and to family medicine, and I matched into family medicine, and I'm so thankful I did family medicine. And the way it happened for me was because I had rotated at the hospital in question, which was NYU Langone Brooklyn campus. And I had made it clear that I was very interested in family medicine and wanted to pursue maternity care health after that. And so I worked with some of the residents actually on a research project. So I remember when I submitted my application, I actually sent an email to the program director just saying how excited I was to work with them. And I reminded her of this research project that I worked on with some of her residents that got published. And then 2 days after, I got an invitation to come interview for my residency program. And the person I interviewed with is actually now my life mentor and coach. And we actually go karaoke singing together, by the way. So that's how that happened for residency. For fellowship, I got really lucky. I prayed a lot about it. And I applied to maybe 10 places and got like 2 rejections off the bat. Got 3 or 4 interviews. I don't even remember now. But the place I'm at right now was actually the first place I interviewed at. And I was on my way to my second interview when I heard back from my first interview 1 week after saying they really wanted me. So I actually had to cancel the rest of my interview. So I don't really know what it was. I guess something I said during the interview and they really liked me because now they're trying to recruit me to stay here. I can't tell you what it was actually. Nothing special that I did extra, not that I can remember anyway. But yeah, that's how that went.
Yeah, very interesting, right? So, you know, I just want to ask some more questions because you did mention that, you know, after that first year of not matching, you shadowed a family physician, but you networked like crazy. Can you tell us what that really means? Because I get a lot of questions from students that want to know, hey, Dr. Loom, how can I network? Like, what is networking? And even if you didn't particularly do that type of networking, can you just give us some insight as to what you mean when you say IMGs need to network like crazy?
Oh, so it entails a lot of things, and it's extremely hard for someone who's introverted like I am. It means throwing yourself out there and getting out of your comfort zone and reaching out to people. So the way I did it was when I was doing my rotations in medical school, I was just very vocal and always asking questions, very interested, genuinely interested in patients and the patient care and what have you, and letting everyone know that that's where I wanted to be. This is where I want to do my residency program. And then after that, when you move on to some other rotation at some other hospital, it's all about keeping those contacts. So one way I did it was doing a research project with some of the residents, right, which entailed that from time to time, I would have to meet up with them again, you know, so always being in their face. When the research project was over, I would just email them or text them, like, the holidays are coming up, happy holidays, if they celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, that type of stuff. What's going on, you know, learn about their families, ask what's going on with their kids, with their significant others. That's kind of what I did. And most especially when you submit that application, it's just sending another email to say, hey, you know, I applied to your program and this is what I did when I was there. And I'm so excited at the prospect of potentially interviewing with you. And that's all it takes. It's that, you know, the Bible says, ask and you shall receive. I mean, you have nothing to lose. You just ask and put yourself out there, which might be challenging, but it's something you definitely need to do if you want results.
Right. I agree. I think people need to, IMG especially, need to get more confident and then really be prepared to, you know, sort of have an elevator pitch. Like, you need to put yourself out there, just like you said. I think another great place to network is at conferences. So going to the annual meetings for whatever society or medical specialty board that you want to be a part of, because there's always going to be a residency program that's showcasing at a conference that you can talk to. Chances are you'll meet either current residents or current faculty at such meetings. And that's also a great opportunity for networking. But good old-fashioned networking. Yes, thanks. I think good old-fashioned networking also works. whether mm-hmm. that is, you know, talking to people, you know, in the elevator, or, you know, just being more open to conversation, especially if you're rotating in a hospital or you're physically present in an educational setting where there are people that are in places that you want to be. I think that's mm-hmm. very important. So can you tell us a little bit more about maternity care fellowships? Because I don't think that's mm-hmm. a very common concept. I am boarded in family medicine, and of course I practice strictly hospital medicine right now. I've done so mm-hmm. for the last 4 years, but I certainly do not know the entire sphere of what it entails to do a women's health, maternity care, or OB fellowship. Are those synonymous? And, you know, there's also probably other IMGs that have a liking for obstetrics and may mm-hmm. want to broaden that horizon and say, hey, maybe I'll do primary care and then I could always pursue a fellowship as another route to mm-hmm. obstetrics if I can't get into obstetrics. Give us some teaching points on that.
Definitely. I think the way to think about maternity care fellowship and with certification, because that's what you get at the end of your training, combined with your family medicine board certification, is a well-rounded family medicine practice, so to speak. So as you mentioned, not a lot of people do the obstetrics of family medicine, because what is family medicine? Family medicine means the jack of all trades, right? So we should be able to take care of newborns to geriatric patients, pregnant, non-pregnant, like everyone we should be able to take care of. But I think more and more family medicine physicians are shying away from the OB part of obstetrics part of family medicine. So the way to think about family medicine and maternity care fellowship is like a well-rounded family medicine practicing physician. So in my case, my program was definitely not OB heavy because we had OBGYN residents. So they were more prioritized in my program compared to me, like when I was rotating over there, my job was mostly triage and not learning how to do much of like managing OB care per se. So I knew that I had to do a maternity care fellowship because I really, really enjoy it. And what it entails is a somewhat restricted form of what OBGYNs do. So the only things that, you know, you would learn to do, and I'll differentiate it compared to what OBGYNs do, is you learn how to manage labor. And then, of course, you learn how to do normal vaginal deliveries, vacuum if need be, depending on what your preference is. You learn how to do cesarean sections. You don't have to. Now, this is something, I love surgery, so I'm doing cesarean sections. You also learn how to manage all types of pregnancies. So unlike in my residency training where I only did normal pregnancy, and if anyone had anything other than normal pregnancy, they were referred over to OBO MFM. So now I'm managing pregnancy and diabetes, but someone who is diabetic and pregnant, gestational diabetes or gestational hypertension or chronic, any of those things. So just handling medications and counseling and monitoring and that kind of stuff. So that's like the extent. And then the GYN side stays constant, apart from maybe you learn how to do colposcopies. Otherwise, you're doing like your IUDs, your Nexplanon implant. What else? Do we do depot shots? I think that's like the routine pap smears. And that's really the scope of what we do. The only things that I don't do will be mostly the gynecological things, or still in obstetrics, I wouldn't put in a cerclage, say, in someone who has cervical insufficiency. Oh, I won't do an ectopic pregnancy. Like, I won't treat an ectopic pregnancy. I won't do any of the GYN surgeries or what have you. So those would be like the differentiating points between me and a regular OBGYN. And definitely, if something is very, very complicated, I co-manage my patient with MFM. So just like a regular OBGYN will co-manage with an MFM.
And for those who don't know, MFM is maternal fetal medicine, which is a subspecialty of obstetrics. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's very great information just for the aspiring IMG out there that, you know, maybe has not had that opportunity the first time around in obstetrics and gynecology and mm-hmm. is willing to branch out. Sounds like, you know, you may want to look into fellowship programs that are available through other specialties that could give you somewhat exposure, similar exposure to what you are looking for. So thanks so much for that. Now, You know, just some additional questions based on some of the things that you said. Can you tell us a little bit more about, because you're doing a master's in public health program now as a fellow, and I get this question from IMGs all the time. They want to know whether a master's in public health will make them more appealing for residency. But here you are doing it later on after residency. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, before I listened to this financial book, thanks to you, Dr. Loom, The White Coat, you actually told me about that book, I would have said, definitely, it doesn't hurt to do a master's degree. Like, just get it. Like, it's great, right? Because you'll be one leg up compared to the regular applicant who has just an MD, then you have an MD, MPH, which makes you more competitive. But really, it's true, it doesn't hurt. I think if you don't match, then maybe it makes sense. But to be honest with you, it's not something that is absolutely necessary and something that, and correct me if I'm wrong, something that program directors are necessarily looking at in terms of favoritism. That's what I've observed now. I think do it if it is something you're really passionate about, but don't do it just to do it to be able to apply to medical school, is what my humble opinion is on this topic.
Right. And I agree with you.
I did it now at this stage because I love public health. I mean, I think if I were in charge of all medical physicians in America, I would mandate all physicians at some point do public health because it's all about prevention, right? And I think our emphasis here in the US is about treatment, which is the most costly part of our US health system. And I think if we spend more money on prevention and in more public health stuff, we will save money. But that's a different conversation to have at a different time.
Right. I mean, I understand you completely. You hit something there when you said the burden of the healthcare system is really with treatment as opposed to prevention. And I think it's almost universal because even for, I didn't mention this, but we're both from Cameroon. So even for people in Cameroon, that's a very common thing is we're always looking for a pill to fix something instead of, you know, mending or preventing illness. Yeah. So let's just talk about that because, you know, as I mentioned, the fact that we're both from Cameroon, I know that we're both non-US IMGs, meaning that at one point or the other, we've had visas throughout this process. And so can you just give us some tips for people that are applying as visa applicants? What are things that you learned that you wish you could have done differently? I personally feel like I should have applied to more programs just because I didn't realize that there were so many programs that did not want to sponsor the visa. And so, you know, that's retrospectively, that's one thing that I can say on my own that I could have done differently. But from your standpoint, can you give us some tips how you handled these visas, especially that year where you didn't match? What did you have to do to keep your status? Do you mind touching a little bit on that?
Yeah, no, definitely. If I remember correctly, during that period, I was on an F1 visa, if I remember correctly. So all that it meant was I just needed to be out of the country every 6 months. I don't even remember, but it was something to that effect where I just had to be out of the country for like a day. It didn't matter how long I was out of the country, as long as I didn't stay in the country for greater than 6 months. It wasn't crazy, actually. It was very easy to do. And then during that time as well, I remember I was applying for my green card because I actually applied for my green card through a process called National Interest Waiver. So all it was because I had research papers that were published and researchers both in America and in the world were using my paper as in citing my work in their work, then you can claim that you are of national interest, right? Because you have produced material that other researchers are using. So I started that application around that time. So at some point I didn't need to be traveling in and out of the country because I got a work permit already and everything was like cooking, you know, like was in process. So that was that in terms of visa status. And then you mentioned your other question was about what I would have done differently while applying. I think the first time it would have been smarter to have applied to both OBGYN and family medicine and even internal medicine. I don't know, just to broaden the horizon. I didn't apply to internal medicine, guys, because I knew for a fact that I wanted to do maternity care. But I'm just saying for people out there who are not particularly picky as to what choice, you're like, I'll make do with whatever choice I have, or I want to just get my foot in, and then once I'm in, I will transfer to another firm, whatever your strategy is. I think it's very important to broaden your cast. Like, you just take your net and you throw it and try to make it as broad as possible, because for us who are IMG non-US, it's much more challenging because of the sponsoring of visas and what have you. So what I would say to do is to definitely do your research and make sure that the programs you're applying to are IMG friendly and non-US citizen, non-green card holder friendly as well. So don't just apply to any program because your friend is in this program or what have you. Because it's kind of like you're wasting your money if you do that. The second thing definitely Dr. Loom touched on is to apply to many programs if you can afford, because I know money is always a limiting factor. I think when I applied, I probably applied to like 75 programs, which I thought was too low. But at the time, it was just a money issue, because like I really wanted to apply to 200 if I could. Those are the things that I would have done differently, because I mean, my second time around, I was just more... I applied to more family medicine programs than I did OBGYN, and I got into a residency as opposed to the first time around when I only applied to OBGYN.
Right. Thanks for going into that detail. I just wanted to ask a little bit more about the National Interest Waiver, because I am not familiar with it. But I've, you know, from speaking with you today, I think I've heard about this waiver before. But, you know, again, other things that I know some IMGs are going to have as questions is, well, how were you able to get those research publications as an IMG? Can you walk us through how you got those to begin with? And when you were doing them, did you already have in mind that you were going to be applying for the National Interest Waiver, or was this just more of a spur of the moment?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. So I had no plans when I was doing this research project. I just love research. And the research projects in question, they started off when I was in college. I was shadowing a bunch of trauma surgeons, and they needed someone to help them with data collection. So that's how comes I even got involved initially in research, right? So I helped in the publication of this trauma paperwork. And this was like when I was in college. And then when I was in medical school, I also published two other papers. I helped in, again, just prelim research and making sense of data. That's how that happened, just because I was interested in research. So I remember towards the end of medical school, I was actually talking to my uncle, and he told me about it because he's a PhD. And he said, oh, I got my green card. And I was like, congratulations, how did you get your green card? And he told me about it because he at the time, he had published almost like 35 plus research articles. And he put in his application, and it went through smoothly. And I asked him, I was like, I only have 4 papers, and I only have like 10 or 15 citations. Like, do you think it would be worth it? And he's like, yeah, why not? This is the lawyer I use. And so I contacted them. They said, it will be very challenging, but we can try. I think we can do this. So that's how that happened, actually. It wasn't anything that was planned. I randomly came across the information by just socializing with my uncle, and he happened to mention it. So it's something you can do if you have a doctorate degree, and it doesn't matter DO, MD, MPH, it just has to be a doctorate degree, and you have to have some research work out there, and you have to have some citations. So other people using your work for their work.
I'm just going to interrupt and tear this down a little bit further. So, you know, as a medical student, how did you get an attending or somebody that was working on a paper for you to become a part of it? How did that really happen?
Got you. So this was when I was doing my internal medicine rotation, and I was working with the chief resident at the time. I mean, I just happened to be like that he was on the floor rotation that month. And so we were on together. And so he would divide his list into two, and I would carry half of his list, like six pages, and he would have the other six pages. And we worked so hard and good together. And I asked him, I said, hey, I'm looking for some research work. Do you know anyone? He's like, yes, I have so much research. He was working on like five different projects, guys. Like, and so he gave me two of his five projects to work on. That's how that went. It was just me asking if he knew someone, and he happened to be the person that was working on all those projects.
Awesome. Awesome. So really what I'm hearing is, you know, IMGs, when you're rotating, you should keep an eye open for a potential project that you can be a part of. You don't have to wait to get an invitation. You step up in there and you ask for the opportunity to serve in mm-hmm. one capacity or the other. That's the same way that I got any kind of research experience on my application, was by approaching one of my attendings during my, I think it was a pediatrics rotation at the county hospital, Cook County Hospital in Chicago, and just really kind of being available. And then the next thing, I was a facilitator. The next thing, I was collecting data, working with some of the MPHs that were part of that study. So, you know, it just takes really putting yourself out there, like you mentioned earlier, Dr. Tala, and just really kind of mm-hmm. exposing your desires so people know what you want. Because if you don't ask, you don't receive, right? Like, you need to just mm-hmm. ask for what you want, and you never know who's going to be needing your help, especially because you're giving them free help. There's tons of people mm-hmm. that want your help. And if you don't ever ask, they may never think to approach you about it. So that may be, you know, you may have opportunities right in front of you that you're not leveraging if you're not looking intently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, we're almost at the end of this episode. Where can the listeners, the students, the graduates of Caribbean schools and non-Caribbean medical schools that are wanting to connect with you because they're like, hey, yeah, I'm in a family medicine residency, or I'm interested in this maternity care, I want to learn more about the waiver, where can we find you on the internet to connect with you?
Oh, that is a very good question. I am on Facebook, very unreliable on Facebook. The best way you can contact me is my email address, which is my first name, last name at gmail.com. So ClariseTala@gmail.com. That is the most reliable way. Facebook, I will get to you hopefully within 2 weeks if you try to contact me on there.
Okay, so I think what's safe is we'll put your email address in the show notes so that anyone that wants to access or have access to you can connect with you via email.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate having you on here. Our book, Beyond Challenges, is available. You can find a copy on my personal store at drninaloom.com. You can also find it on Amazon. We would love for you to grab a copy and learn a little bit more about Dr. Tala's story. She wrote about her time in Grenada and just some varying experiences that we talked about in the beginning of this episode. But look at her now. She overcame, and we want to tell you that you can do this too. Thank you, Dr. Tala. Any final words before we get off the show today?
The only thing I would say, the words of wisdom my brother gave me. I remember when I was trying to network and I was hesitant to do it. And he told me, you know, we're not from here. We're not Americans. Like, usually you would notice that your peers already have parents in the medical field who can make things happen for them. But unfortunately, because we move here from another country, we don't already have that kind of networking in place. So definitely feel empowered to go knock on doors and wait for people if they're not immediately available to see you, and be persistent, because that is the only way you'll be able to get things moving and achieve things for yourself. So don't give up.
Don't give up, guys. You heard it from the doctor herself. We appreciate your advice. This episode is sponsored by the IMG Roadmap eCourse. The IMG Roadmap eCourse is a step-by-step program that is geared to guiding international medical graduates on how to go from simple IMG to becoming a U.S. resident physician. You can check us out at imgroadmap.com.